Okay, we're continuing here on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the question as to what was the reason behind Rebbe Ben Beteira's position that we find in the Mishnah, where Ben Beteira says that if you bring a Korban HaPesach Shelo Lishmo on the morning of the 14th, that it fails. So Rebbe Hoshaya said within the position of Ben Beteira that Ben Beteira believes that a Korban HaPesach can be brought all day. And since Mano is all day, then Lo Lishmo in the morning is no different than Lo Lishmo in the afternoon. And that's why, according to Ben Beteira, there's a problem of being a Korban Pesach Lo Lishmo in the morning. The Gemara then questioned, is that really possible? Because doesn't it say Ben Arbayim, which we in general have thought to mean in the afternoon? And we gave the alternate explanation that Ben Arbayim means between last night and tonight, which means all day. And the Gemara challenged that from a number of locations where we have Ben Arbayim, where it doesn't seem to mean all day, including the Korban Tamid, and then we did it from the Hadlakat Neirot, and then from the Ketoret. In each of those cases, we had another word or another indication telling us that the Ben Arbayim was literally the Ben Arbayim. By the Tamid, it was the fact that the Tamid Shoshachar says, Echad Baboker, Enat Shnayim Baboker, so then Ben Arbayim means the afternoon. By the case of the Neirot, we said, Mi Erev Ad Boker, which means that the Avoda of lighting the menorah is in the evening, and therefore Ben Arbayim must mean the evening. And we saw that the Ketoret has a Hekesh to the Neirot, or Lakat Neirot, because they're found in the same Pasuk. And Ben Arbayim that's applied is applied from the same Pasuk, and therefore it has the same din as the Neirot. So now the Gemara says at the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph, Hatam Namiktiv, Sham Tizbach Et HaPesach Be'erev. What about the fact that the Pasuk in Parashat Re'eh says specifically that you're going to bring the Korban HaPesach in the evening? So it's one thing if you say Ben Arbayim, then you define Ben Arbayim as being all day. In Parashat Re'eh, it says that you bring it in the evening. It's very hard to argue then that Ben Beteira believes you can bring it all day, and that's the Zman HaPesach. Ha'o li'uchar davar hu da'ato. That's coming to tell you that it is later or it goes later. The Tanya, we have a Braita. Yuchar davar, we shall delay or postpone the item, shenemar bo be'erev uben arbayim. The Korban HaPesach, which has both the descriptor of be'erev from Parshat Re'eh, as well as ben arbayim, said about it, that will be later, the davar shelo ne'emar bo ela ben arbayim bilvad. Will go later than the item that only has ben arbayim noted by it, which is the Korban HaTamid. So in general, we have a principle, victor aleha chavei ha'shlamim, aleha ha'shlem kol korbanot kulam, that on the Korban HaTamid, that is a requirement that we complete all the avoda of the day, which means on the Tamid Shel Shachar you do all the avoda, and that means that the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim is the last Korban that is brought in the Mikdash, the last of the avoda in the Mikdash. The one exception to that rule is the Korban HaPesach, which you have a right to bring afterwards. That is because of this bright over here, which says that the Pesach, which has the descriptor of Erev and Ben Arbayim, will go later than the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim, which only has a descriptor of Ben Arbayim. That's which actually leads us to the times for Mincha Gedolah, as the Gemara Psachim says in Tamid Nishkat, that it gives us the different times when they have to bring the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim to facilitate the ability to bring the Korban HaPesach after the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim. And the earliest time it was done was six and a half hours into the day, 12:30 of Sha'ot Zmaniyot, which is the beginning of Mincha Gedolah. And that's because that's the earliest they brought the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim in order to facilitate the ability to bring the Korban HaPesach afterwards, when it turns out that Erev Pesach was on Erev Shabbat, and they had to make sure to get everything done before Shabbat. So that's what you use that Pasuk in Re'eh for. And now the Gemara asks a fundamental question, that if you brought it in the morning, we'd say totally fine, you can do that. Then when it gets to the afternoon, Amar Tiyuchar Davar, you'll have to do it after the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim. You'll have to wait. Meaning that here the Pesach is kosher all day. And you can bring it in the morning without any considerations. All of a sudden you get into the afternoon, you say, oh, wait a minute, you gotta do the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim first, and then do the Korban HaPesach. All of a sudden you have to delay it because of the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim when it was kosher all morning. That seems to be strange. Mar says it. We do have another paradigm like that. Damar Rav Yochanan, Halocha, Mitpalel Shel Mincha, V'achakach Mitpalel Shel Musaf. We have the same consideration with regards to Mincha and Musaf. Shacharit, we daven in the morning. Musaf, according to the Mishnah and Tefillah Shachar, is kol hayom. Musaf is ra'oy to be daven all day long. Mincha starts in the afternoon from 12:30, 6.5 hours, shows money oath into the day. That's when you can start davening mincha. What Rabbi Yochanan points out is that if you wait to daven musaf until you've crossed into the time period in which it is okay to daven mincha, then you have to daven mincha before you daven musaf. So that's similar to our case over here. Musaf, you could have davened all morning without any consideration. But once you enter into the zone of mincha, then you need to daven mincha first, and then daven musaf afterwards. Similarly, over here, with the Korban of Pesach, you can bring it all morning without any consideration. But as soon as you enter into the time period of Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim, then you have to wait to delay it until after the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim. The halacha that is noted here by Rabbi Yochanan is most famously brought up with regards to Yom HaKippurim, where we try to make sure that we start Musaf on Yom Kippur before we enter into the Zman of Mincha in order to avoid this problem. Because if you wait too long and you start Musaf in the Zman of Mincha, then Rabbi Yochanan's din would apply and you would really supposed to daven Mincha before you daven Musaf and you'd have to flip them around. Therefore, many shuls are makpid to make sure to daven or start musaf before the Zman HaMincha in order to not come into this conflict. Now, what's interesting is the Shita Mekubetzet in the Hashmatot, in the back of the Gemara, brings this halacha with regards to Yom HaKippurim. Bein kein tzarich ata lehizaher b'Yom Kippur, lehitpalel tulat musaf kodem chatzot. You should make sure to daven musaf before chatzot. Ve'i yuachar achar. Chatzot, if you go after Chatzot, directly spell Mincha Kodem. You'll have to daven Mincha first. I mean, the fact that he mentions Chatzot is interesting because that has to do with the stira that you find within Rashi between the Gemara and Brachot as well as two places in the Gemara and Psachim as to whether the Ikar Zman of Mincha is at noon and we just delay until 12:30 because of technical factors, or is it really that the Zman of Mincha only begins at 12:30? So whether he's using Chatzot literally over here, or whether he's using Chatzot loosely to mean Mincha Gdolah. He says, despite that fact, v'lo anehagu ha'am kein. The minhag ha'am is not to worry about this. And even if you go late on Yom Kippur and you start Musaf during the Zman HaMincha, you can daven Musaf first. V'amar Rabbeinu Eliyahu HaKohen, d'lo kasha midei. The fact that the people don't worry about this halacha from Rabbi Yochanan is not a problem. D'alcha mayri, d'al korcha tzrich leitpael shteyem yachad, b'lo ichur, d'fishir otze lalot, l'aristonu kuyotzeba, because the story of the situation where Rabbi Yochanan is, he has other things to do afterwards. And those other things to do afterwards are going to preclude him from davening. So he must daven now the tefillot in order to accomplish them. Because of that, he has to do mincha before musaf. But exactly what you're saying, on Yom Kippur, where you don't have that alternative, where you can't have achila b'shtia, where he's going to be docha the tefillot, and you could do even things show reshut, because we're not worried about you not davening. In that case, you could daven musaf before mincha. So he claims that there's a qualification of Rabbi Yochanan's statement, and it's only when you are pressured to daven, in a situation when you, if you don't daven now, you won't be able to daven later. And in that case, you have to make a decision about mincha and musaf, which one goes first. On the other hand, on Yom Kippur, where there's plenty of time, there's no distractions, there aren't other things that are going to draw you in. In that case, you wouldn't have to make the decision. But in general, despite what the Shita Mekubetzet says here, many shuls tried to be makpid to get to Musaf or before Zman HaMincha on Yom HaKippurim. The additional thing to note over here is that even though the cases sound the same, the logic behind them are actually different. And that is because the case of Mincha Musaf, and the Shita Mekubetzet himself mentions this, the reason that you daven Mincha before Musaf is because Tadir, V'sheinu Tadir, Tadir Kodem. So when you have Musaf enter into the Zman HaMincha, the reason you give precedence to Mincha is because Mincha is Tadira. So we put Mincha, which is Tadira, first, and then we daven Musaf afterwards. So it's an issue of Tadir, Shenu Tadir. That is the operative principle that tells you to daven Mincha before Musaf. In our case here, by Pesach and Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim, the reason that we are invoking has nothing to do with Tamid Tadir V'Sheinu Tadir. If you invoke Tadir, then you would say, oh, Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim goes first because it's more frequent than the Korban HaPesach. But that's not the rule because you have a different offsetting rule, which is you're not allowed to bring anything after the Tamicho Ben Ravayim. So that is not a consideration over here. The reason you delay the Pesach to after the Tamicho Ben Ravayim is because you uchar davar, which is the reasoning brought here in the Braita. So it turns out that the logic behind the two cases, even though they look very similar, are actually different. And that by davening, the operative principle is tadir sheinu tadir kodem, whereas the operative principle by the case of the Tamid and the Pesach is yuchar davar. So they're operating with different reasons, even though the result is the same. And this result being the same is what is being invoked here by the Gemara to show you that there is precedence for this concept where you can have something have its time be freely open in the morning, and then when it comes into conflict with something else, it'll have to be delayed or pushed behind the other item. So now the Gemara says, Uben Abayim Dichtib Gabe Ketoret V'Neirot Lomali. According to your understanding here, why do you need to have a Ben Abayim by the Ketoret and the Neirot? According to you, Mi Erevat Boker comes and limits the Ben Abayim, and so then the Ben Abayim is not applicable. It is meaningless in some sense, because Ben Arbayim, according to you, means all day. And then Meribad Boker comes and says, don't mean all day, but mean late in the day, right before nightfall. Well, if that's the case, don't write Ben Arbayim at all. And if it is written, then you have to give me some reason why it's written. So that's one question. Behold, an additional question on this position of Oshai is, Heshiv Rabbi Tachat Ben Betera L'Divir Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi stepped into the shoes of Ben Betera and answered Rabbi Yeshua's claim against Ben Betera. Remember, Ben Betera says, if you shech shlo lishmo in the morning, it's pasul. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua said it was kasher. Lo, ima mart b'shlo shasar she'ei miksato ro'oi. Because on the 13th, which is a time, if it's done shlo lishmo, it would turn into a shlamim, it would be fine. There, the Korban of Pesach is not ro'oi at all. Tomar ba'basar she'miksato ro'oi. You can tell me that's compared to the 14th, where on part of the day, it is ra'oi to bring a Korban of Pesach, and therefore maybe it's called Zmano. So Rabbi Yeshua's claim in the Mishnah is that when you shecht it in the morning of the 14th, it's ke'ilu, you shechted it on the 13th. Rabbi says, how can you say that? 14th and the 13th are totally different. The 13th is a day that is cleared of Korban of Pesach. You can't bring it on that day at all. So therefore when you do it lo lishmo, it's kasher because it could be brought as a shlamim. The 14th in the morning, you can't just say, oh, that's like the 13th, because in the afternoon of the 14th, you can bring the Korban of Pesach. And maybe then the din should be different. Vimito. And if you're right that Ben Betera believes that the whole day is kasher, the Korban of Pesach, then Rabbi should have said, kulo ra'oi hu. The entire day is ra'oi. He just said, miksato ra'oi. A portion of the day is ra'oi. Here he's stepping into the shoes of Ben Betera and saying, miksato ra'oi. He should have said, kulo ra'oi. That seems to be a proof that Ben Betera clearly does not believe that the whole day is ra'oi the Korban ha-Pesach. And even though you could have argued, similar to what we said before, that the word ki'ilu was really a response to Rabbi Yeshua, could have said the same thing over here, which is, Rabbi Yeshua l'shitat cha, at least miksat hayom is ra'oi, and therefore Rabbi's undermining Rabbi Yeshua l'shitato. He's not declaring the shita of Ben Betera, he's declaring the shita of Rabbi Yeshua. So the Baalei Tosafot point out that that won't work for Rabbi Hoshaya. Rabbi Hoshaya, who says that Ben Betera believes that the whole day is ra'oi the Korban of Pesach, that means that Rabbi Hoshaya rejected this kind of concept, that a miksat hayom is not enough to undermine the Korban. So if it doesn't work for Ben Betera, it also is not going to work for Rabbi Yeshua. So based on that, you see from Rabbi's statement that it's clear that he believes that Ben Betera thinks that only in the afternoon of the 14th is a Korban Pesach Ra'oi. El Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan gives a dissenting opinion to explain Rabbi Ben Betera. Posel haya Ben Betera Pesach Sheshachto Barbasar Shacharit. He says definitively against Rabbi Shaya's position before, the Ben Betera believes that if you bring a Korban of Pesach in the morning of the 14th, Lishmo, it is Pasul. Ben Lishmo, Ben Shalo Lishmo. Whether you bring it L'Shem Pesach, it's Pasul, because it's not the Zman of Pesach. Ben Shalo Lishmo. Even if you bring it Lo L'Shem Pesach, where if it's not the Zman of Pesach, it should have turned into a Shlamim, nevertheless he does say it is Pasul. Hoel U'miksato Ra'oi. Since a part of the day is Ra'oi. Since half the day is ra'oi for the Korban of Pesach, it has impact on the other half of the day to tell you if you do it Pesach Shlo Lishmo in the morning, that it will be pasul. We'll have to see why that is, or why there is such a concept. But what you see from Rabbi Yochanan is that the reasoning behind Ben Betera is not because he believes that Korban HaPesach is ra'oi to be brought all day, but rather it's only ra'oi to be brought in the afternoon. And then we can go back now and all the Ben Arbaim's that we said before mean afternoon, like we would have thought. And then you don't have any of the questions you had before. But in addition, now you only have the question as to why is it that when you do it Shalo Lishmo in the morning, it is Pasul. And that's the reasoning that Rabbi Shaya rejected. But the reason that seemingly Rabbi notes here to differentiate between what Rabbi Yeshua says is the 13th and the 14th, which is the fact that in the 14th in the afternoon, it is Ra'oi the Pesach. And that somehow has impact on the Korban of Pesach when you bring it Shalo Lishmo in the morning. Megadei pa Rabbi Abahu. So the word Megadei usually means to curse or to denigrate. So Rabbi Abahu basically cursed or denigrated this position of Rabbi Yochanan. The truth is that many of the Gonim mean that it comes from the word to wave or dismiss, which is like a wave of the hand, or to be migareif, to wipe off. And so therefore, Megadei pa Rabbi Abahu was that he was dismissive of this position of Rabbi Yochanan. Im kein, Pesach kasher leben b'teira, hecha mishkachada. How are you ever going to have a kosher Pesach according to Ben Betera? I de'afreshe ha'idna. If he is mafrish the korban in the morning, dachoy mi karohu, then it is knocked out from the outset. Ve'idaf shirinu me'atmol. If he mafrish the korban of Pesach from yesterday, near benidchahu, it was ra'oy at one point and then lost its status. So here we're going to enter this in more detail a little further on in the daf. But the concept of dichui is that if you have a korban that you're trying to bring for a certain item or for a certain purpose, then as long as the korban is ra'oi, then you can be makdishit, and it stays at its status until you brought the korban. If in the intervening time, something happens that makes it that the korban cannot be brought, whether that means it's a disqualification of the individual who's bringing the korban, or a disqualification of the korban itself, that's what's called nidcheh. It is now pushed away or been disqualified from being put on the mizbeach. That interim time of disqualification makes it that even afterwards where it becomes ra'uy again and is requalified, that you cannot bring the korban on the mizbeach. So what Rabbi Abahu was pointing out is Rabbi Yochanan's shita within Ben Betera creates this problem, which is on the morning of the 14th, any korban HaPesach goes into a zone where it's totally unusable. During the morning of the 14th, if you bring it l'shem Pesach, pasul. You bring it l'shem shlamim. You bring it shalo lishmo, pasul. That means that the korban of Pesach on the morning of the 14th can't be brought as any korban whatsoever. Prior to the morning of the 14th, you could have brought it as a shlamim. If you did a lo lishmo, it'd be a shlamim. Post the morning of the 14th, meaning the afternoon of the 14th, you bring it l'shem Pesach, it'll be kosher the Pesach. So it has qualification in the afternoon, has qualification before the morning of the 14th, but it's completely disqualified during the morning of the 14th. That's what's called dichui. So now, what he's pointing out is that if you're makdish the korban in the morning of the 14th, when you're makdish it, it doesn't take effect, because it's disqualified from the outset. There's no kedusha that can be chal, because it's what's called dichui mi'ikara. It's underlying or fundamentally disqualified from the moment you try to be makdish it. Because at that time, it's not ra'oi to be a korban Pesach. It's not ra'oi to be a korban shlamim. Or if he's makdishit prior to the morning of the 14th, then at that time it was fine. You were makdishit at a period of time where it was qualified. And then when you get to the morning of the 14th, all of a sudden it becomes dachoi. You can't use it at all. And then after that, it goes back to being qualified again. That's what's called nireh. It was qualified. And then nidcheh. It was disqualified. Which seems to be from here that that would be pasul. Given that, when is it that he could be makdish the korban pesach? Ela amar Rabbi Abahu tehei lachar chatzot. So Rabbi Abahu answered his own question, which is he could be makdish it afternoon on the 14th. Meaning that you can't be makdish it earlier, can't be makdish it in the morning of the 14th because of the problem of dichur. You can only be makdish it in the afternoon of the 14th. In order to avoid this problem, Abaye Amar Afilu Tema Mitzafra. Abaye says you can even be makdish it from the morning. Ein mechusar zman lebo bayom. Something that happens on the same day is not called mechusar zman. So even though you cannot bring the Korban HaPesach in the morning, so it's in a period of time that is disqualified, nevertheless, you can be makdish during that time, knowing that in the remainder of the day, there will be an opportunity to bring the Korban HaPesach. Which means that nidche or dichoy is not relevant when there is a period on that exact same day where it will become requalified. So disqualified means it's got to be disqualified for the whole day in order for it to be problematic. It's only disqualified for a short period during the day, then you can be makdishit during that period of time, knowing that it will become qualified later in the day. But Papa Amar, afilu tema miorta. Even the night before you can do it, laila ein mechusar zman. Because nighttime is also not considered to be mechusar zman, since the next day will be its man. Tani debei Rabbi Yishmael, because we have a principle in the Braita of Rabbi Yishmael with regards to the time period in which two korbanot can be brought. It's actually in this week's parsha, Parshat Emor, in Perachav Bet, Pasuk Chav Zayin, where it says, Shor okesef o'eis ki ivaleit, v'yash shivat yamim tachat imo, it'll be with its mother for 7 days, u'miyom ha-shmini v'hala giratzei l'korban yishel l'Hashem. From the 8th day onward, it is a korban for Hashem. So this is the requirement that you may not bring a korban from a behema until it's reached its 8th day. And what Rav Papa points out is this din of Rabbi Yishmael, which is, Leil Shmini Nichnas Ledir Lehitaser. On the night of the 8th day, meaning the night prior to the 8th day, this animal can be put into the corral and counted towards Maaser Behema. Uke de Rabbi Apotariki. De Rabbi Apotariki Rami. Vodriki says there's a stira in the pasuk that we just read. Ti vayashivat yamim tachad imo. That'll be for 7 days with its mother. Halaylo chosi. Sounds like on the night before the 8th day, the korban would already be ro'oi, because it only has to wait 7 days with its mother. By the night of the 8th day, that's already fine. Uchti, but then it says, umayom ha-shmini v'hala yeratzen. Afterwards it says, oh, on the 8th day onward it is good. Halaylo lo chosi. That implies that the night before would have been disqualified. So from the diuk in the pasuk, it says 7 days with its mother, 8th day, it's good. What about the night between the 7 days and the 8th day? If you look at it from the perspective of the 7 days, the 8th night would have been fine. If you look at it from the perspective from the 8th day, the night before that 8th day would have been problematic. Hakeit said, how do we resolve that stira? Laila l'kdusha v'yom l'hartza'a. To tell you that you can be makdishit that night, and then it can be hartza'ah, it can be brought as a korban and provide ritzui in the morning. But what you see from that is that it's not called mechusar zman. Even though the korban can only be brought on the day of the 8th, nevertheless, you can be makdishit on the night before you get to the 8th day. That has to do with the din of maaser behema. With maaser behema, when you put the animals into the corral, you can only put them into the corral to be counted towards maaser behema, if they are animals that are ra'oi to go on the mizbeach. So here you're putting animals into the corral, and you have an animal that is 8 days old. Once it reaches 8 days, you can put it into the corral, and if you can count it as one of the 10 as you're going out, you count 10th, and the 10th one will be kadosh, it'll be amongst those 10. But if the animal is only 7 days or 6 days old, you can't put it into the corral to be counted as one of the animals exiting to count towards maaser behema. What Tam Debei Rabbi Shmuel says is, you can put it into the corral the night that precedes the 8th day. You can already put it in the corral from Rav Apotariki, which is Rav Apotariki tells you that you can be makdishit starting on the night of the 8th, even though you can only be makrivit on the 8th. And just like you can be makdishit, that makes it qualified. And once it's qualified, you can then put it into the corral for maaser. But what you see from this is that even though a korban is in a position where it cannot be brought, but the fact that it can be brought later in that day, that already allows you the night before to say that it can be mukdash. And similarly by the korban HaPesach. Since you can bring the korban HaPesach on the next day, the night before is not considered to be mechusar zman, and therefore you will have a right to be makdish the korban the night before, and it will not be called dihui. So here you have an expansion based on this concept, where Rabbi Abbas said you only be allowed to be makdishit after chatzot. Rabbi comes along and says, first of all, you can be makdishit in the morning, because we don't say that it's mechusar zman when it's on the same day. Even though you can't bring it in the morning, nevertheless, in the afternoon you can bring it. So if you're makdishit, it's okay. But Papa extends that even further and says you can be makdishit the night before. Because the night before is not considered to be mechusar zman when you have the capacity to bring it on the next day. And similarly, the Korban of Pesach, since you have the capacity to bring it the next day, you could be brakdishit the night before, and it would not be problematic, it would not be considered mechusar zman. The truth is that what you're asking is the fact that maybe you could just read the word yomim or yom to refer to the day of rather than the daytime. Just like in English, the word day can be used to mean the daylight hours, or day can mean 24-hour period, so too the word yom in the Torah can mean 24 hours, or yom can mean the day itself. How do you know over here in the pasuk that's found in Parshat Emor, when it says Shivat Yamim, and then Yom HaShmini, how do you know it's not talking about those 24-hour periods? The answer likely is, and it is a question that's brought up by the Baalei Tosafot over here, although he doesn't bring this answer, is the fact that we learned the fact that you can only bring Korbanot during the day from the pasuk in Tzav, which says Beyom Sabato, on the day that he commanded, that Korbanot are only Ksherim to be brought during the day, meaning daytime, and not at night. So given that a Korban is only Ra'oi to be brought during the day, then the definition over here of Umayom HaShmini V'Hala is literally going to be daytime and not the whole day, the 24-hour period. Because a Korban is not qualified to be brought at night. And so for that reason, I think that Rabbi Poteriki is saying that the word Yom in that pasuk means daytime. And therefore, if you say Shivat Yamim is 7 daytimes, and Yom HaShmini is the 8th daytime, you have a limbo state for the night that's in between the 7 days and the 8th day. Baalei Tosafot themselves say that Yom HaShmini teaches you that a Mechusar Zman is not considered to be Psulo B'Kodesh, but rather to be a more significant type of psul disqualification, which has implications in Kodoshim as to whether if B'Diavad is put on the Mizbeach, whether it erased, it has to be taken down, or it can remain on the Mizbeach, and this would have implications for that, and that's why you need an additional limud over here. Now, Baalei Tosafot asks something I think that you were alluding to before. Aren't there situations in which people want to be mafrish korbanot for their tahara? I mean, that this is an individual has an obligation to bring a korban because they're going to become tahor. So the Baalei Tosafot say, "V'delo dami the mechusar kipurim." This isn't similar to someone who is missing a kapara. Mechusar kipurim is someone who became tahor, went through the processing of tahara, but has yet to bring their korbanot to finalize or finish off their process of tahara. So even though those mechusar kipurim actually are makdish their animal prior to the time period when they are tahorim, that's not called mechusar zman. And that's because as the Baalei Tosafot explained, it was never ra'oi to be brought at that time. Dichoi only applies where you had something that was ra'oi to be brought and then was disqualified during that period of time. But if it was never ra'oi to be brought at that period of time, you can't call it as being disqualified. So over here, they only come chayav in the korban after their tahara is complete. So the fact that they can't bring the korban right now, that's not classified as being dichoi because they have no obligation to bring the korban at this time. As opposed to the korban of Pesach, which is ra'oi l'shlamim, even though it's the zman of shlamim, you have no ability to bring this korban in that morning, whether for Pesach, whether for shlamim. So even though it's a qualified time, the korban is not qualified, and that's what makes it into dichoi. The problem over here is that even though it is the zman of shlamim, since the 14th in the morning is a time that's ra'oi l'shlamim, and now all of a sudden the korban is disqualified from being brought as a korban shlamim, that's called dichoi as opposed to what's happening by the mechusar kipurim. And that's how he differentiates between a mechusar kipurim and our case over here. Although the Keren Ora disagrees with this Baalei Tosafot, the other thing to note is that Rav Papa, in other places, notes, Masha Rav Papa Svirle Yesh Mechusar Zman the Bobayom, that in the Gemara in Menachot, it makes it sound like Rav Papa believes that you can have Mechusar Zman even in the middle of the day. But Tzarich Lechalek, Tosafot says, between what's said here and what's said there, and the B'shita Mekubetzit explains what's the difference between Rav Papa's positions is, the Hatamari Babodot Shiktim Abudat Arvit Labudat Shacharit. The case over there in Menachot is where you did something that was later before the item that was supposed to be earlier. So there you can't claim that Mechusar Zman Bobayom is because there was a trigger that has yet to be triggered. So if you have a avoda that needs to be done in the morning and then a avoda that needs to be done in the evening, if you take the evening avoda and put it before the morning avoda, that's Mechusar Zman because you have yet to have the trigger that would bring this thing into a Zman where it would be operational or functional. if you haven't brought the shachrit stuff, you can't bring the arvit stuff. When you move it above, you can't say, oh, it's mechusar bo bayom, it's fine. Because the shachrit stuff is a trigger or a condition of allowing the afternoon stuff to become chayav. As opposed to over here, v'achamari behifrish. Over here, you're just speaking about being mafrish the korban. You're not speaking about bringing the korban, being mafrish the korban, or waiting for some trigger. You're simply designating the korban for what will be ra'oi later on in the day. And that's how he distinguishes the scene for a pub over here, who says that mechusar zman bo bayom is not a problem for hafrashar v'hakdashah, versus the case simenachot, where it is a problem, mechusar zman bo bayom, moving the avoda prior to something else that is the trigger or needs to precede it, that would be called mechusar zman, even though it was the bo bayom. Amrele Rabbi Zeira, the Rabbi Abau. So Rabbi Zeira now says to Rabbi Abau, based on his discussion of Rabbi Yochanan's position, Lema kasav Rabbi Yochanan balei chayim nidachin. From this he would conclude that Rabbi Yochanan believes that live animals can end up with dikhoi. It's actually a machloket in the Gemara in Yoma. There is a view in the Gemara in Yoma that dikhoi only applies to animals once they are shechted. Once the animal is dead, then you can have dikhoi. It's really dealing with the shnei si'irim, the two si'irim that are brought in Yom Kippur. If something goes wrong with one of the si'irim after you've shechted it, what are the implications for the other sa'ir? So there's an opinion that there's only dikhoi after shechita. Over here, Rabbi Yochanan's making it clear that he thinks there's dikhoi even when the animal is still alive. Meaning that there is balei chayim nidachim. That is because the way Rabbi Abou understood Rabbi Yochanan, he said that dikhoi would apply on the morning of the 14th when you are makdish, the korban. It'd either be dakhoi mi'ikara or it'd be nireh vin nidche, implying that even when the animal's alive, there's a concept of dikhoi. And the fact that he didn't just answer, there's no dikhoi by animals that are alive, and then you could be makdishit on that morning, could be makdishit before, because dikhoi is not relevant to live animals. The fact that he didn't give this answer implies that Rabbi Abou believes, that Rabbi Yochanan thinks, that balei chayim nidachin. Amalayin, he said, you're right. That is true. And even though, as the Balei Tosafot say, that Rabbi Yochanan has this shita all over Shas, that balei chayim nidachin, and he says it in numerous locations, says it's hard to understand why there's a chiddush in each one of those locations. And he says about that, you have to look into, or delve into, explain these statements of Yochanan, hanach tlat balei chayim nidachim, that in three places he makes the same statement, the balei chayim nidachim, ushnei mikamot paligei derav, and in two of those locations Rav argues on him. You have to give an explanation or try to understand what is the distinction in each of these cases, or what's the chiddush in each of these cases that you wouldn't have known in the other cases. So he says that Rabbi Yochanan clearly says it, and he says it in a number of locations. We just have to figure out what the chiddush is in each location. And Damar Rabbi Yochanan, how do I know that he holds this? Behema shel shnei shutafin. You have an animal that's owned by two partners. Hikdish chetzia. One of the partners was makdish, his half of the animal. Bechazar velakach chetzia. Bigdisha, and then he goes out and purchases, buys out his partner on the other half, and then he's makdish the second half, kidosha, the animal is kadosh, meaning that he was makdish half, and then the other half, so half and a half, you get the whole animal is now kadosh, ve'ena kreva, but you're not able to be makrivid on the mizbeach, ve'oseh tmura, and you do have the capacity to make it into tmura, utmurata kayotseba. But the exchange will be exactly like it. Just like it can't go in the mizbeach, so too, if you try to exchange this animal on something else, that something else will also become kadosh, the same tusha, which is that it's something that's kadosh, but not able to be put on the mizbeach. First of all, in terms of the tmura, the reason that you can make it into tmura is because there is no concept of tmura by shutafin. When you have partners, there's no tmura. When you have a single individual, then you can have tmura. So once he buys out the partner, that's why now there's a single owner and there is tmura. So that's as far as tmura is concerned. Now, as far as what happened over here, shma mina tlat. You include three things from this statement of Rabbi Yochanan. First of all, shma mina, balei chayim nidachim. When animal is alive, dikhoi does apply. As we see over here, where he's makdish the animal, or half the animal, it can't end up on the mizbeach because of the problem we'll see in a second of dikhoi. Something that from the outset is disqualified, that disqualification will remain permanently and cannot be rectified. Ushmamina yesh dikhoi bidamim. And also you can see that there is dikhoi with regards to monetary matters. Let's understand this. We'll first use Rashi's explanation, then we'll come back and discuss where the other Rishonim argue. Now, when he was makdish the animal up front, the only thing it could be makdish it for was its monetary value. That is because, at first, he only owned half the animal. He didn't own the other half of the animal. Had he owned the other half of the animal, he was the single owner here, and it was makdish half the animal, then the kedusha would be mitpashet. It would spread out and make the whole animal into something that is kadosh. We'll get to that in Masechet Arachin, which is that if you're makdish something, if you're makdish some animal or part of the animal, which is a life essential limb, then the kedusha spreads to the entire animal. So had he owned the whole animal and was makdish half of the animal, then the kedusha would have spread. The problem here is he has a partner that's blocking the spread of that kedusha. So when he's makdish the half the animal, the kedusha can't spread to the other half of the animal. That means when he's makdish it up front, the only thing he'd be makdish it for is its monetary value, which means that he would liquidate his possession here, take those monies, and then purchase a korban to be brought. But now you learn those three things, which is that animal now is nidche, according to Rabbi Yochanan. It can no longer be brought in his back, even when he goes and buys out his partner. And when he buys out his partner, he's makdish the second half of the animal. Now the animal is fully kadosh. Why don't you say now that it has kedusha to go from being put on the mizbeach? What you see from that is that when he initially was makdish the half, that ruined the animal from ending up on mizbeach. That's because when he was first makdish the half the animal, it was not ra'ui to end up on the mizbeach because he couldn't get the kedusha onto the second half of the animal. Because of that, it was nitche at that moment. So now, first of all, you have dikhoi v'balei chayim, the animal's alive, and yet it's being disqualified from going on the mizbeach. Number two is, it's dikhoi mi'ikara. From the outset, there was no way that he could be makdish this whole animal to end up on the mizbeach, because he only owned half of it, he didn't own the other half. So he had no capacity to do it. Nevertheless, since you disqualified it from the outset, then when you get the full animal later on, it doesn't matter, that dikhoi remains with it, and you cannot then make it into something that's kadosh to go on the mizbeach and have kedushat tagut. Number three is kedushat damim. Even though you were makdishit for damim, that kedushat damim is what disqualifies it later on. So even though you were not makdishit for kedushat tagut, and then it got disqualified, you're only makdishit for its monetary value, still that is enough to disqualify it from being brought as a korban. So now what the Balei Tosafot point out is, there's really no difference between dikhoi mi'ikara and dikhoi bidamim. Because by definition, as he says here, he says, v'im tomar, imkein dikhoi mi'ikara, v'dikhoi bidamim, akol echad. That when it's disqualified from the outset, and it's dakhoi because you were makdishit kedushat tamim, they're all one thing. Dakhol dakhoi mi'ikara, ein bo ela kedushat tamim. By definition, if it's disqualified up front, the only thing you can be makdishit for is kedushat tamim. And that means that if you're makdishit up front, and there's a problem, that what's going to be there is kedushat damim. So he says they go hand in hand, and why are you saying shmamina tlat? Why are you saying there are three conclusions here? According to you, Rash, the way you're explaining it, dechoy mi'ikara and dechoy damim are the same thing. Because dechoy mi'ikara makes it that it only can have kedushat damim, because it can't go on the mizbeach. So the Balei Tosafot answer, v'yishlamar, demishkakala. There are times when you can find manifestations of one without the other. For instance, v'kibel dam b'kli sheish b'mayim. You're doing a kabbalat dam into a utensil that has water in it already. The rishon rishon dochoy. At that moment, as each drop of blood goes in there, it is dismissed or disqualified from being brought on the korban. B'chazar v'nepach tamar adam. But after a certain amount of time, enough blood goes in there and turns it into the color of blood. So as the first drops of blood go in there, they are now overwhelmed by the water, and the water remains the color of water. Over amount of time, enough blood goes in there where it changes the color of the water to dam. In the end, you have dam here, and you should be able to put on this mizbeach. The problem is that it was disqualified, dikhoi mi'ikara, because the first drops that went in there were batel, each drop, one at a time, was batel, batel, batel. And then when it overwhelms it and becomes all blood, it's too late, because you had a period of time where the dam was disqualified, or the first dam that went in there was disqualified. So that's a case of dikhoi mi'ikara, where there's no issue of dichui damim. It has nothing to do with being makdish the animal or being makdish something, but it's something that is called dichui miikara. And similarly, in the opposite case, we have dichui bidamim, that's not dichui miikara. For instance, where a person's mafrish money to be used for the purchase of a korban, so there's no animal there to say dichui miikara, yet if the person then becomes a mumar or a mishumad, then there is dichui damim, even though there's no dichui miikara. So you have cases where dichui damim and dichui miikara can be separated. So even though in most instances they go hand in hand, there are instances where they're separate, and that's the explanation of dichui damim. And even though one could be makdish a portion of an animal for its monetary value, and that would not necessarily disqualify the animal from being put on the mizbeach, that's because there you had the potential to be makdish the whole animal, you had the ability to do it, and you makdish just a portion of it. In our case, he was makdish it, but he was prevented, or it was impossible for him to be makdish the entirety of the animal, and that's what generates the dikui over here, which was, it became disqualified from the outset, there was no way that this person could create an animal here that would be ready to go on the mizbeach. The Baal HaHidus Vot then brings two alternative views as to what dikui damim is. The first is from the Rabbeinu Chaim. Rabbeinu Chaim Efereish, Yesh dichui bidamim, shedochet mura shelo likarev. So what dichui damim means over here is that it affects the tmura that it can't be mukrav. So even though this wasn't an animal that ever had kedushat aguf and was nitchet from a status that only had a kedushat damim, nevertheless, that's powerful enough to make it that the animal that's made into tmura from it cannot go on the mizbeach. And that's what it means, yesh dichui bidushat damim, that downgrades the animal to the status where animal kedusha created from it will also be pasul from going on the mizbeach. And that's the explanation of dichui damim according to the Rabbeinu Chaim. And then he quotes from the Rabbeinu Chananel a third interpretation, which is Rabbeinu Chananel mefresh, yesh dichui bidamim klomar, didamim duchuyim, shalo yakrim in adamim korbano, shebatoto liafrish. That there's a concept of dichui with money. If you separated out money for a particular purpose of buying a korban, and something happened to disqualify you during that period of time, yesh dichui bidamim. There is dichui on that money or that monetary value. Not just an object that you're makdish for its kedushat value, but even money that you set aside in a makdish for a particular purpose, that money can have dichui by it. Not just an animal can be dichui, but even the money that you separated out for the purchase of an animal can't be dichui. That money is still mukdash, but it can't be used for its primary purpose, the original purpose of the korban that you're trying to discharge your obligation with. And the Baal HaHidus Vot then spends almost half the daf then discussing whether what the Rabbeinu Chananel says is correct or not. He notes that there's tremendous difficulty with that explanation in a number of places where dichui damim comes up, where it's not relevant to speak about money, yet the Gemara uses the term dichui damim. And then Tosfot also notes exceptions to this rule of dichui miikara, where he notes that not only is this concept of dichui discussed here by Korbanot, the Gemara in other places in Shas discusses whether it has application to mitzvot, including one of the cases is by the Hadassim in Sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah says that if you have Hadassim that grow a lot of berries on them, where they would no longer be kosher as Hadassim, and then afterwards you pick off the berries, does that then become ra'oi? Does the hadas now become ra'oi if it was nidcheh? And over there, the Gemara says that if it had more berries, me'erev Yom Tov, there the Gemara says that if it was disqualified from the outset, that's not called dichui. How come? Rabbi Yochanan says that dichui miikara is considered dichui. Why there, by the Hadassim, do they say that dichui miikara is not relevant? Disqualified from the outset, then it was never ra'oi to become nidcheh. It happens to be a machloket in other places in Shas, whether dichui miikara has application. Rabbi Yochanan clearly believes it does. Others believe that you have to be qualified before you can be disqualified. If you're disqualified from the outset, then you never reach the point of qualification, and therefore it doesn't disqualify you. But here you see that the Gemara in Sukkah clearly believes that dichui miikara doesn't apply, and yet they don't bring Rabbi Yochanan's disagreement about that. So the Baal HaHidus Vot say that it's different there. You have the capacity to fix it over there. You could pick off the berries. Since you can change it and you can fix it, and it's not something that's out of your control, that's not called dichui miikara. That's one qualification. The second qualification they make is, what about mechusar zman? We just discussed now, why don't we consider that to be dichui miikara? the first 7 days of the animal's life, it's disqualified. Why isn't that called dichoy mi'ikara? So the Baal HaTosafot make another qualification, which is dichoy mi'ikara doesn't imply when the chozer v'nira mimela, when the problem will rectify itself by itself. Then there's no concept of dichoy mi'ikara. So here you have two qualifications of that statement of Rabbi Yochanan. Number one is that dichoy mi'ikara doesn't apply when it's in your control to fix it. Number two is dichoy mi'ikara doesn't apply when by definition it will requalify itself. So for instance, in a case for an animal in the first 7 days where it is disqualified, nevertheless, it's going to automatically, when it reaches the 8th day, be qualified. That's not called dichoy mi'ikara. Alright, so that's what we learned from Rabbi Yochanan over here. Amar Ula, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Achal chelev, if he eats chelev, the ihivish korban, then he separates out a korban chatat for the unintentional consumption of his chelev. Behemir dat. And then he leaves the faith. He all of a sudden becomes a mishumat, b'chazarbo, and then he does tshuva. Hov nidche yidache. Since at one point he became disqualified from being in the korban is disqualified, and in essence is psula. If you remember, we saw this gemara recently in the end of Horiot. We had this discussion about exactly this case. Itmar Nami, we have another member of the name of Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Amar Rabbi Yobau, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Achal chelev, he ate chelev, behefrish korban, and then he separated out a korban chatat to rectify the unintentional violation, v'nishtateh, and then he lost his mind, v'chazar v'nishtafeh, and then he got well again, he became of sound mind, ho v'nitcheh yidacheh. Once again, since there was a period of dichui in there, that makes him disqualified from this korban, and the korban can no longer be brought as a chatat. And we need both of these statements of Yochanan. If you only told me about the case of the Mishumad, Mishum Dehu, Dachi Nafshe B'Yadayim. He caused the Dichoy by actively doing it himself. He took himself off the Derech. He left the faith. He created the Dichoy himself. In the case where the person lost his mind, D'memele Idchi, Ki Yashen Dami. Maybe we'll consider him like someone who went to sleep. Because we only see sleep as a temporary suspension of his status. And it's not something that he's doing b'yadayim. It's something that is part of his natural cycle. So we don't see that as a suspension of his status as a bar dat. And the Baal HaTosafot even go as far as to say that if the korban is brought while he is sleeping, it is still kasher because he's negdar and bar dat even when he is sleeping. And so you would have thought maybe the same thing applies by a shoteh, that this is only a temporary suspension of his status as a bar dat. And similar to sleeping, it's something that happens naturally and something that goes away or one awakens from naturally, although that's not always certain by the case of shoteh, that maybe you should classify him like a yashin. Gemara's answer is kamash malan, that we don't say that. That yashin is just a temporary suspension or really part and parcel of being a bar dat. Is that someone who sleeps, because that's a natural thing that a person does. Being a shoteh is a totally new status, or taking the person out of their condition of being a bar dat, and is a change in their status, rather than simply a temporary suspension or part and parcel of a normal bar dat's life. That's why I brought you the second case, the kamash malan, that that's not the case. When a person's not of sound mind, you can't bring a korban, because you need dat. It has to be lirtzono, a willing bringing of the korban. That means that you require dat. Being a shoteh means that you're not a bar dat. And that disqualifies you completely. And we don't look at it as if you're sleeping. Even though, again, when you're sleeping, you're also not a bar dat. But that is a temporary state of an individual who is, in essence, a bar dat. But he's just taking himself out by going to sleep at this moment. But if you woke him up, he'd be a bar dat. A shoteh, you can't control when he's going to be a bar dat anymore. Therefore, that period of time, which is out of his control, is considered to be something where it is nidchet. And if you just told me about the case of shoteh, where it's not in his control to return to being of sound mind, of a hocha, maybe in the case of the mishumad, he has the capacity to do tshuva at any moment, maybe that's not considered dichoy. That's why we have to have both memorot of Rabbi Yochanan, to teach you both a mishumad and a shoteh are considered to be dichoy, because they go into a period of disqualification. the Mishumad, because of the fact that Zebach Rishayim Toeva, so while he is a Mishumad, is disqualified from bringing a Korban. Rashi brings a limud from the Pasuk in Chulin, which is Me'am Haaretz Pratam Mumar. Me'am Haaretz says that someone who is a Mumar is then disqualified from being a Korban, or because of Zebach Rishayim Toeva. In either case, he has a period of time where he's disqualified, and even though he has an ability to change that at any moment, the fact is that he put himself into that position, be a Dayim, that's considered to be Dichud. In addition, if a person becomes a Shoteh and loses his mind, it's also considered to be Dichud because he's not a Bar Dat anymore, therefore he can't bring the Korban Lirtzono. And during that period of time, since he has no control over when he will then be of sound mind again, that lack of bar dat disqualifies him and makes it into dichui. Bayi Rabbi Yirmiya. Achol chelev v'ifrish korban. A person ate chelev and then was mafrish a korban. Frisha chatat to rectify this unintentional eating of chelev. Behoru beitin shechelev mutar. Then beitin comes along and gives a psak that chelev is mutar. This type of chelev is not considered to be asur. And then they retracted that position. Mahu, what is the case of that interim period? Mi avi dichoy or lo avi dichoy? Is that classified as dichoy or not? Meaning that in the period of time, he now gets disqualified because there's no need to bring a korban during that period of time. Amalei ha'u saba, ki patach Rabbi Yochanan b'dichoyin. Rabbi Yochanan used to open up his shiur about dichoy meha potach. He used to open with this question. My time, huh? What's the reason? Hatam gavra idache, korban lo idache. Over there, the individual was disqualified, but the korban was not disqualified. Hocha korban nami idche. Over here, the korban itself was also nidche. So the way Rashi explains it is, the Zakein says that Rabbi Yochanan used to open up with this, with his shear, because it was pashut. This is simple. This wasn't even a question to Rabbi Yochanan, that this is definitely considered to be dichoy. The reason it is dichoy is because, so hotam, by the case of mumar and shoteh, gavra idache mi korban, korban lo idache. The korban all along could have been brought. The problem is that the owner of the korban, the person who was makdishit, had something happen to them that disqualified them. So the disqualification came from the individual, not from the animal or the korban itself. But Torah chatat zot lo nitcheit miYisrael menakshirim. The concept of bringing a korban chatat for this violation, this korban chatat, if it was owned by someone else, would be kasher. So the gavra was nitcheit, but the korban was not nitcheit. Aval hocha, in the case of the psak of beitin, Torah korban zeh nitcheit minakol. Not only is this person now disqualified from bringing the korban based on the psak of beitin, but anybody who violated chelev during that period of time actually would not bring a chatat, because they would be covered by the parhelam davar shel tzibur that the beitin will have to bring when they retract their position. So since they are covered by the korban of the beitin, and there would be nobody who would bring a personal chatat during that period of time, because that means that that korban in essence has been wiped out of Kalal Yisrael. And so not only is the gavra disqualified because he didn't need to bring a korban anymore, but also the korban itself, the chatat for that violation, was also disqualified. And therefore it was pashut to Rabbi Yochanan that that was considered to be dichoy. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam learns just the opposite. He says that they open up the shir with something that is more interesting, in depth, something that was more complex. And that is what the Zakein was saying. Not that the case by the beitin is pashut, rather, the case with the beitin is more complicated, and that's why he opened it up to engage the students. And he says it's just the opposite. By the case of the mishumat, and by the case of the shoteh, over there, the gavra was disqualified, and the korban was disqualified. The gavra was disqualified because there's no longer someone who can bring the korban, and that's what disqualified the korban. The korban is no longer a korban that is ra'oi to be brought, because these individuals were disqualified. On the other hand, by the case of the beitin, you have a temporary problem. You have a gavra that's nitcheit. This individual can't bring the korban chatat because beitin said there was no violation. And he can't bring it as a voluntary offering. On the other hand, be'emet, the truth is, he really was chayav a chatat and the korban was a good korban all along. So given that, the case by the Beit Din was more complex, because there you have a gavra nitchet, but the korban all along, but in essence, was still a good korban chatat. It was just a hiatus because this person had to follow the psak of Beit Din. And so therefore, it's the case is a more complex case. So that was the differentiation in that case. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan opened up with that issue. According to Rashi's view of it, the answer would be that yes, it's considered to be dichoy. According to the Rabbeinu Tam's way of explaining it, the other two cases were obviously dichoy. This case was more complex, and we don't have an answer, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan opened up with it, because it was a more complex issue. Right now we go, Amar Shimon ben Ozai, Mikublani mipi shivim ushnaim zakein. That's the end of the Mishnah. Lame le demitna shivim ushnaim zakein. Why does it say in the Mishnah that he says, I have this from 72 zakein? Rashi says the nature of the question is not, why does he say I have it from 72, but rather, zakein instead of zakeinim. Why does he say it in the singular rather than shivim ushnaim zakeinim, which would be the proper grammar? Kekulu b'chada shitoto havukaine. So Rashi explains over here that they were all found in a single location, and they were of a unanimous view. And that's what it means, zakein. Zakein in the singular is like what we say about Bnei Yisrael, Vayichan Sham Neged Ahar. It's used in singular, even though they're speaking about a multitude of people, to tell you about the unity of the people. And similarly over here, he's using the word zakein to indicate the unanimity of all of these 72 zakeinim, that they were all there together, and they all agreed that this is the halacha. Lo hosi ben Azai el ola. The only thing Ben Azai added on over here was the ola, the original Mishnah in the Perek, which said that the only two items that are disqualified for the lo lishma, are the korban pesach and the chatat. Otherwise, anything else done lo lishma or lo lishma was fine. Along came Ben Azai and formulated it differently. And the Mishnah tells you that all he added on was an ola. That also an ola that's done shlo lishma is problematic. Amar Rav Huna, my time of the Ben Azai. What's the reasoning for Ben Azai? Because the Pasuk says in the beginning of Vayikra, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, V'akerev Rechraim Yechatz B'mayim, Rekiva Kuin Yitzakol V'gder Mizbecha, Olahu, Yishay Reach Nicholach La'ashem. So he, Lishma, Kshera, if you do it Lishma, then it's Kshera, Shalo Lishma, Psula. Then if you do it Lo Lishma, it would be Pasul. Asham Namik Tivehu. Wait a minute, the word Asham also has the word Hu appear by it, and that is in Vayikra Perek Zayin Pasuk He, where it says, So if you're going to say that by the Ola, you should also say it by the Asham. Same answer the Gemara has given many times with regards to the Asham Hu. That Hu is found by the Haktarat Emurim, putting the fats on the Mizbeach. And like we said before, if you'd even put the Emurim on the Mizbeach, it would be kasher. So how can the Hu over there tell you that it is Me'akeh? How can the lishmo by the emurim of the asham be me'akev when the emurim themselves are not me'akev? So that can't be what it means. The Gemara says, wait a minute, hainami la charakterit emurim hu dichtiv. By the ola is true as well. The posel by the ola is also written in v'ikter mizbecha olahu. That's talking about the emurim as well. So how can you use the hu by the ola differently than the hu by the asham? The Gemara says, trehu ktive. There are two words hu that are written. One, the one that we quoted here in Vayikra Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is by an Olat Nidava. There's an additional Pasuk that's brought in Parshat Titzaveh with regards to the instructions of the Miluim in Perek Chavtet, Pasuk Yud Chet, where it says, V'gdarta et kol ha'ayla mizbecha, olahu la'ashem, reach mikolach yishay la'ashem hu. So over there you also have the word olahu that is found, so it's written twice. Im enu inyan la'achar haktaret emurim. Because in both places, the olahu is written by the haktaret emurim, but you don't need it in both places. So, v'enu inyan la'achtarat emurim, tneyu the inyan of lo lishma for the olah by shkitan by the other avudot. Where it says, asham nami trei hu ktive. Wait a minute, the asham also has two times that it says hu. One is the one that we read in Perek Zayin Pasuk Hei, v'kter otam ha'kwen v'zbecha yishel ha'shem asham hu. And the other one is by the Ashamot that are brought at the end of Parshat Vayikra in Perek Hei, Pasuk Yudet, where it says, Asham Hu, Ashom Asham LaHashem. By the Asham Taloi, you also have the Asham Hu that is mentioned, so that's mentioned twice as well. So also by Yasham Nami Trehu Ktive. So that can't be the source for the fact that Ben Azai thinks an Ola is Psula Lishma and an Asham is Kasher Shalo Lishmo, because whatever you're bringing by Ola is also found by the Asham. So you have to go a different route. Ela Ben Azai, Bekal V'chomer Maiti Lo. He learns that at Bekal V'chomer. Uma Chatat She'enu Kaliil, a Chatat that is not put fully on the Mizbeach, Shachta Shalo Lishma Psula. If you shechted the Shalo Lishem Chatat, it is Psula. Ola she kaleo, an ola that goes totally on the mizbeach, lo kol shekein, certainly it should be a problem of lo lishma. Tosfo does ask, according to Ben Azai, what happens to the miut of shachat ota? Ota is a miut that says only the psul of lo lishma applies to a chatat and nothing else. And if he does not hold of it, including the ola, then he should also include the asham, because the asham is also excluded from shachat ota. Talei Tosfo leave it as a question. On the other hand, the Shita Mekubetzer over here makes a suggestion that he believes that the Kal V'chomer is undermining the miut. That even though you have a miut of Shachat Ota, the Kal V'chomer allows you to override it. By the case of the Asham, he thinks that Kachatat V'Kasham is used for another reason, and not the Hekesh of Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore he doesn't have the Asham that's brought in over here. Or it says, Malachatat Shekein Mechaperet. Wait, a Chatat provides Kapara, and Ola doesn't provide Kapara. So maybe the problem of lo lishma by chatat is connected to the aspect of kapara, which an ola doesn't have. It says, Pesach yochiach. A Pesach can prove that wrong. A Pesach shelo lishmo is problematic, even though a Pesach is not coming to provide any kapara. Ma le Pesach shekein zmano kavua. Maybe the reason a Pesach is pasul shelo lishmo is because it has a fixed time to be brought. Chatat yochiach. The chatat will prove that wrong, because even though a chatat doesn't have a fixed time, it's also pasul shelo lishma. The chazar adin, and then you'll use a meh atzad or a binyan av, lori zek reizeh, the lori zek reizeh. The chomer of the chatat is not applicable to the pesach, and the chomer of the pesach is not applicable to the chatat. Atzad ha-shaveh shaveh, the common denominator between them is shem kodashim, that they are kodesh, v'shachatan shlo lishma and pasul. If you shach them shlo lishma or shlo lishmo, they are pasul. Af ani avi ola, she kodashim, you bring the ola, which is also kodesh, v'shachatan shlo lishma psula. And you shech that shlo lishma, it should be psula. Where it says, ma, l'tzad ha-shaveh sheben, sheish ben sad karet. Wait a minute, there is something there, there's a common denominator between them that is common to Pesach and Chatat that is not found by the case of the Ola. And that is that a Chatat is brought for violations that are associated with karet. Unintentional violations, where if they were intentionally violated, you'd be chayav karet. Pesach, someone who doesn't bring a Pesach, is also Chayav Karet. So they have a Tzad Karet associated with them. And Ola has no association with Karet whatsoever. So maybe the reason that Lo Lishma and Lo Lishma apply to Pesach and Chatat is because of the Karet aspect. And Ola doesn't have that aspect, so maybe it shouldn't be true there. So Ben Azai, Tzad Karet, Lo Parich. Ben Azai thinks that that is not a good common denominator between them. As Rashi points out, that there are different forms of karet. The chatat, that is the punishment that would have happened had you done it b'mezid. But it's not a punishment for not bringing a chatat. No, then by the Pesach, the karet is not a punishment that would come. It's a punishment if you don't bring the Pesach. So they are different forms of karet, and therefore they're not similar enough to call them a common denominator. Now the Baal Yitosvot note over here, Tema, Ulur Belezer, the Pasal Chatat Pasham, Yipasal Nami Ola. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, who's in our Mishnah, said before that an Asham is also like a Chatat, based on that, an Ola should also be problematic. Because you can learn it out of a common denominator between Chatat, Asham, and Pesach. Yesh Lamar, the Shayach Tzad Sad Karet Basham. He says, no, maybe you can disqualify it and say they have a common denominator that doesn't apply to Ola, which is that there's a Tzad Karet by all of those Korbanot. By the Korban Chatat, it's brought on violations unintentionally, that if you did them intentionally, you'd be Chayav Karet. Pesach, if you don't bring it, you'll be Chayav Karet. Asham never has a Karet associated with it, the exception of Asham Taloy. And Asham Taloy is brought for a Chatat, which is associated with Karet, where you have a Safek, whether you need to bring the Chatat or not. So there is an Asham that has a Tzad Karet to them. So that common denominator would disqualify them. Why I'm telling you about this Tosafot is because it's very interesting that the Baal Tosafot say that an Asham Taloy has a Tzad Karet to it. Because back on Yud Amud Bet, in Tosafot, Tiri Amat Kel Ma, he says, Ma le Tzad HaShavesh Ben Sheish Ben Tzad Karet. The Gemara itself said about Chatat and Pesach, they have it side karet. It says, even though an Hashem Goloi is brought on karet, it doesn't bring kapara, it's only a defense against Yisurim in the interim until you get the right answer, and then you bring the kapara with the Chatat. So over there, the Bayit Tosafot says, it's not called Sad Karet. Over here, the Bayit Tosafot is saying, oh, it is called Sad Karet, to disqualify the Asham. Because otherwise, you could have included an Asham from Pesach and Chatat. The Gemara over there says, you can't do that because it's Sad Karet. Over here, the Bayit Tosafot is saying that, well, Asham does have a Sad Karet. Over there, he said it doesn't have a Sad Karet. It's interesting difference in the Bayit Tosafot. Over there, on Daf Yud Amud Bet, Tosafot brings the second reason, which is actually the final reason brought by the Gemara over here, which is, Asham Nami Laiti. So why don't you also bring in Asham? Asham, Parich, by Asham you can say, Malatzad HaShemeshmen, Shkeni Yeshanam B'tzibur, Kibi Yachid. And Asham has something that is differentiated from the Pesach and the Chatat. A Pesach and a Chatat are brought both by Yachid and the Tzibur, but as we noted before, an Asham can only be brought by Yachid. And that's the second answer that Bayit Tosafot brought back on Yud Amud Bet, which is why you can't learn out of Pesach Chatat to Asham. Even though you could have learned it from Tzad Karet, based on the Gemara over here, it seems like that would have worked. According to Ben Azai, who doesn't think Tzad Karet is meaningful, you should have been able to include Asham. Asham is excluded because of the problem of common denominator of Tzibur. Now, the truth is that a Korban of Pesach is really only a Korban Yachid and not a Korban Tzibur. Rashi over here quotes what is mentioned by the Gemara in Yoma, and which has important ramifications with regards to the Korban Pesach, is that even though the Korban Pesach is brought by Yichidim, many individuals bring the Korban, since it's brought by Knufaya, since it's brought in a public way and everybody brings it at the exact same time, it turns it into a quasi-Korban HaTzibur. So even though it does not brought as a Korban HaTzibur, nevertheless, it is called a Korban HaTzibur. And Asham can never be a Korban HaTzibur. Although the language of the Gemara is a little interesting, it says, Ken Yeshnam Bitzibor Kibi Yachid. It has a manifestation of Yachid and Bitzibor. By Chatat you have that, you have a Chatat Yachid, and then you have a Chatat Akal, like the Musafim on the Moadim, where we bring a series in the Chatat. So you have Yachid and Tzibor. By the Korban of Pesach, you tell me it has a status like a Korban Tzibor, because everybody brings it together. And therefore, it's no longer called a Korban Yachid, but it's called a Korban Tzibor. It's not Yachid and Tzibur. It's either Yachid or Tzibur. It's not Bitzibur can be Yachid. It's could be Tzibur. Ellen Gate, you argue that maybe in certain instances it'll be a Korban Yachid, like a Pesach Sheni. Maybe there it's classified as a Korban Yachid, even though in general the status that's given to it, that it's a Korban Tzibur, is applicable even when Yachidim bring the Korban of Pesach, because of the fact that in general it's brought at one time. So just question, the language itself is a little difficult. That Ben Azai said Sad Karet is a problem. Ben Azai, Gemara Gemirala. That yes, if you had to learn it from the Tzad HaShaveh, you would have a problem because Pesach and Chatat have a common denominator of Karet, and you can't learn Olah from that. So then how did Ben Azai have this, that an Olah is disqualified? Gemara Gemirala. He had a Misora. That's exactly what he says in the Mishnah. That I got this Mipi Shivim Mushnaim Zakein. He got it as a Misora. Ba'akam Rav Huna Kal V'Chomer. Didn't Rav Huna say the source for Ben Azai was a Kal V'Chomer? Because we started at the Sugya Am Rav Huna, my time of the Ben Azai. And first he brought it as a Kal V'Chomer, and then possibly as a Tzad HaShaveh. That means that Rav Huna thinks that it's a Limud and not a Misora. If it's a Misora, why is he searching for the source for Ben Azai? So Lo Amra Elo L'Kadeg Ba'Talmidav. He did it to sharpen the students. So the way Rashi brings it one of two ways is either he wanted them to challenge the fact that he was asked, saying that this was the source of Ben Azai, so he wanted to challenge them, or he wanted to show them that you can make Kal V'Chomers. He's encouraging them to use logic to try to learn things, so he's showing them that you can apply logic, even in cases where there's a Misora, we can still try to apply logic, and he was training them to think in a manner that involves Kal V'Chomers. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.